That's the guiding principle. That's served me well for 15 years in the industry. Just see something weird, just ask why. Just figure out what's going on. Dig a level deeper, talk about it, write about it. You know, what they say about science doesn't start with eureka. It starts with, that's funny.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
This is Edge of the Web Radio, episode 371. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks from Site Strategics. Every week, we bring you some amazing guests from around the world talking about trending digital marketing news as well as topics. We unpack a key marketing topic each and every week for you, our audience, and whether you're a freelancer in the marketing industry or if you're part of an agency in digital marketing or if you're part of the marketing team in a corporation, this show is for you. Be sure to check out all the recent shows over at Edge of the Web Radio. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. We talk search engine optimization, search engine marketing, social media marketing. We talk conversion rate optimization. We talk, just recently, we talked about the automated customer relationship management and the like. So we've got a plethora of shows that can meet your interest. So go check us out over at edgeofthewebradio.com. We're on all the different podcast platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn, Spreaker. We also just got placed on Amazon Podcast. So check us out over there. And you can easily say, hey, play Alexa, play Edge of the Web Radio Podcast. Hopefully that did it for somebody. Anyway, check out all the articles as well as the transcripts over at edgeofthewebradio.com. Well, our title sponsor for the show is Site Strategics, our parent company, and we are the pioneers in the agile digital marketing methodology, and we focus on technical SEO, social media, and basically what we just talked about, but we focus on getting results and changing those techniques to be able to improve and modify to get even better better results for your digital marketing dollar. So if you're interested in what we can do for you, simply give us a call at 877-736-4932. All right, I want to introduce man on the stick right now. That's Jacob Mann. He's the studio creative director. Welcome back from vacation.
I'm back.
You are back.
I made it back in one piece.
Yes, good, good. Evidently, you built an entire castle in your house, though.
Yeah, I did that. So we went on vacation, and it's with four kids, so I don't know if I really came back rested. And we got back Saturday night, and then I spent 7 hours on Sunday building an indoor playground set, and that was all kinds of fun.
Because you needed rest, and that would relax you.
Right. Yeah. So now I'm walking around today like an old man because I was sitting, squatting, bending, and installed this whole thing in a room that is 2 inches taller than the tallest piece of this playground set. Lord. So it wasn't really...
No clearance there.
No, it wasn't as easy to put together as the directions would make you think.
All right. Well, more power to you. It shows you love the kids here, or you were just told to do it and you said, yes, ma'am.
I'm going to go with both. Why not both?
Absolutely. All right. So we want to let you know who's coming up on the show. We're going to be talking to Dixon Jones here from NLinks very soon here. We want to make sure that you listen to some of the recent shows over the past. We talked to John Mueller, Gary Each, and Michael King, as well as Tim Schmoyer. Some really fantastic shows here. And we got another one today talking to Will Critchlow. So if you're interested in being part of the show, just email us over at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. You can also contact us at the site at the site edgeofthewebradio.com and set your reminders on YouTube whenever you want to see our videos go up. But we do a news broadcast as well as an interview each and every week. Check out all the bonus features that we have, and on top of that, sign up for our newsletter because we're sending this information to you, who we've talked to and what we've covered on the show each and every week straight into your inbox. That's a piece of digital marketing gold right there. So with all that out of the way, let's turn around and let's meet this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Will Critchlow, CEO of Search Pilot.
So Will Critchlow is the CEO of Search Pilot, a company owned by the founders of Distilled. Search Pilot focuses on their SEO A/B testing and Meta CMS CMS technology, that's previously known as the Distilled ODN. Will, thanks for coming on board with the show today.
Thanks for having me on, Aaron. How are you doing?
Very good. I'm very good. We certainly appreciate connecting with us. Where are you right now? You're what part of England?
So I'm at home in St. Albans, which is a small city just north of London. So yeah, it's commutable into central London, but
very cool.
It's kind of an old historic market town, which is quite nice.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Are you familiar with Biggleswade by any chance?
I don't think I've been there, but that's where Tom Anthony lives. One of my colleagues in Search Pilot.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, it's a funny named little place.
And absolutely.
How do you know Biggleswade?
That's where my mother's from.
No way.
Yep.
So yeah, so that's it's on the same train line, basically out of London. It's just a little bit further north from where I am.
Very cool. Very cool. Hopefully, we're going to be able to get back there soon. So we might ring your bell when we're abroad there.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we talked about a year and a half ago, and it was a fantastic interview. We certainly appreciate you coming back on board. And you're continually challenging the SEO community, letting them know what's happening in the machine learning space. But also, you have a good legacy inside of SEO for a long period of time. You've seen a lot. Before we get into that, because that is kind of a trip down memory lane that I want to go through some of the evolutions of search, let's talk about Search Pilot, because that's a big deal for your organization and all the SEOs in the world who've been around for a while, know Distilled, know what you've been able to do with the ODN. But for those who are new to the industry or are just jumping into SEO, tell us about Distilled, the ODN, and what Search Pilot is now.
Yeah, so here's what's been going on. So Distilled, we actually founded Distilled back in 2005. My co-founder, Duncan Morris, and I. And we've over the years grown from a base in London to offices in the US, and the Searchlove conference series as well. Mm-hmm. And then in the last few years, as you mentioned, we've been building this this platform called the Optimization Delivery Network, the ODN, which was for SEO A/B testing and what we call Meta CMS, which is essentially making changes to any page on a website. And we're very much focused on the kind of enterprise end of the market. So we're solving problems for big websites. And that's a software platform. Mm-hmm. And so we've been building that as a business unit, as an R&D team initially, and then a business unit within Distilled. And earlier this year, we spun that out as an independent company. Distilled had been bootstrapped all the way. We'd never raised funds or anything else. Mm-hmm. And so we spun out Search Pilot as a new company. And we sold the rest of the business, so the consulting and conferences business, we sold to a company called Brain Labs, which is an agency as well, like Distilled, but coming from the paid side of things. So they're PPC, paid media, biddable, social advertising specialists. And they actually acquired a company called Hanapin just after us. So Hanapin is the company behind PPC Hero and HeroConf.
Yep.
For those who know the biddable and paid media landscape well. And so kind of all three companies quite similar. Hanapin being the US-centric biddable, Brainlabs being UK and US biddable, Distilled being UK and US organic. And so yeah, we kind of put those three together, which has been great. And so the last, the 6 months or so after that, my time was very heavily spent on the integration, getting my old Still teams bedded in as part of that combined Brain Labs entity. Mm-hmm. And that's going really well. And the teams are all up and running. And yeah, it's, you know, everything anybody might have known about the old Distilled consulting teams, they're now part of that Brain Labs operation.
Fantastic.
And doing SEO in that space, which is great. And then gradually over time, as planned, I'm still working with the Brain Labs team on the direction of SEO and helping guide and support that. But I'm not directly leading and managing those teams anymore. They now report into that org chart. Mm-hmm. And I'm spending the majority of my time running Search Pilot as a standalone technology business, which is super exciting.
So Brain Labs, we're actually familiar with Hanapin. It was right down here in Bloomington, Indiana. So we're big fans of that group. So how large is Brain Labs now with this convergence of these different groups?
300 and some people. I don't know the exact number, but it's pretty substantial across US and UK. And that's, I think, around the US. So Hanapin had a semi-remote workforce already even before COVID.
Sure.
So they have people all over the country. We had offices in New York and Seattle. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there was the Bloomington HQ. And Brain Labs had a Austin, Texas presence. So, that's where the setup is. Unfortunately, of course, COVID happened just after all of this went down. So I haven't had a chance to travel around to all the different places. Austin in particular is one of my favorite cities. And I was looking forward to the excuse to go there, and I've never been to Bloomington. So yeah, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to do that yet. But
Well, it sounds like an incredible team and just a treasure trove and a powerhouse of talent.
It really is. Yeah, there's so many great people. And I think what gave them the ability to do that as well was that they'd, Brain Labs had sold a minority stake to private equity the previous year. Mm-hmm. So had quite a kind of significant step more clout and capability to grow quickly with resources behind them. But certainly we at Distilled had never, as I said, we'd bootstrapped all along the way. And so the other cool thing is that in addition to the acquisitions, they made a bunch of impressive hires at the senior end. So you know, global MD, CFO, COO, those kind of people who have really been around the block and done these things before, because you know, it's my first rodeo still. And I personally have been getting a ton out of learning from those experienced folks and seeing how they operate, you know, a senior leadership team or an executive team that is operating a business at that scale, because I've never been a senior part of something like that.
Oh, but you just have to feel great whenever you've been able to bring and challenge bring your entire group of professionals and be able to see it have a fantastic home and being managed by the senior levels. It's almost like maybe your baby's all grown up, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge part actually of it for us as founders of Distilled. Was we wanted to make sure that that we didn't just kind of push them out of the nest, right, as it were.
Right.
That it was a great home and a place where they could thrive. And I've been really pleased with the way that the leadership team has pulled that together. And even people that I hadn't met previously, you know, I didn't know Jeff Allen, who ran Hannapin, mm-hmm. who now runs North America for Brain Labs. We vaguely crossed paths, but we didn't really know each other. And then, of course, we're thrown into that crucible of March, April, May time, where you know, the world's going to hell, and that puts a lot of pressure on a senior team. But it was they're great people, and it was really
wow. What a pressure cooker, and boy, coming out of the other end with a solid team, and that just goes to a testament of the structure that you guys have. So kudos for that. That's fantastic. And you don't hear, honestly, you really don't hear that many stories of these type of builds, this type of growth in the economy right now, at least with the type of company conversion like you're talking about now. It was tough luck on the timing of that, but it sounds like you guys did fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think 2020 has gone how really anyone planned, but all things considered, I mean, we've been super lucky and very pleased that the team has come together the way it has. I think a lot of things are, we're seeing pockets of recovery in all kinds of areas, mm-hmm. Around, you know, we work broadly across different bits of the UK and US economies, and we are seeing pockets of recovery.
Right.
Obviously on our side, I think the big impact has been obviously on the conferences, where, you know, we can't run in-person events at the moment. And so that's the thing that we still have a hurdle to get over, mm-hmm. to figure out what the future of Searchlove and HeroConf look like in the short and medium term. But I'm optimistic these teams are going to come together to do that. So it's
speaking of Searchlove, what was the frequency of the conferences that you've had
for we ran we used to run three a year. So London, an East Coast one, which we were just in the process of moving from Boston to New York, and San Diego. Mm-hmm. We'd run each of those every year. And we, in the end, haven't been able to run a single 2020 event. Our first one was supposed to be San Diego, it was scheduled for March 25th, I think. And so that was a weird time I wish I'd journaled it or something, because it's one of the few times in my life that I can remember watching my own mind change. Day by day, as new information came along, because I vividly remember I traveled to the US, and my last trip to the US was in early March, mm-hmm. and I made that trip, and I remember setting off thinking everything's fine. I remember the middle of the week thinking, maybe there's something to this. this seems to be accelerating faster than I expected. Went out for dinner in Seattle on the Wednesday night, I think, and places that were normally packed were empty. We were the only people. I think there were two tables full in one of the restaurants we went to. And then I flew back, and everybody's hand sanitizing and starting to like look a bit nervous if anybody coughs, those kinds of things. And then the next week we were postponing Searchlove. And it literally was day by day, changing views and changing opinions on that stuff. It was intense.
It was striking for any business owner, yeah. But for running conferences and we certainly feel bad for Third Door. They had their SMX that had to be postponed in June. Everybody, mm-hmm. I mean, South by Southwest has
all in the same boat. Same boat.
All
right?
In the same boat. But
it's very tough.
Yeah, absolutely is. But that's right. The information was coming at us that week. Right there, actually, was such a critical week, and I mean, we're all navigating it with such eyes agog at what we're really trying to understand. Yep. So, yep, that was tough. But I can only imagine how big of an impact that was to your business model as well, because Search Love is huge. What's your regular attendance in these conferences?
Yeah, so we would have hundreds of people at each mm-hmm. event. So, you know, they weren't the biggest in raw delegate numbers, but I think the thing for us was the scale of the influence that, you know, it let us bring together influential people from around the industry to speak, mm-hmm. And then obviously to attend. It was a place to meet prospective clients, place to meet existing clients and catch up.
Sure.
I think, yeah, you know, the knock-on effects will be there for a long while, but I think, you know, we're committed to the brand, and we're excited about continuing to, you know, one day get back to the in-person events, and in the meantime, doing our best to connect with everyone in these strange ways that we have to these days.
Are you reticent on the virtual conferences and the like? There's a bit of a burnout on.
Yeah, so we didn't leap into that immediately. What we did was we pushed back the in-person events was the thing we did initially. Mm-hmm. I think what we wanted to try and figure out was how we differentiate. What would be different versus existing digital formats? You know, mm-hmm. webinars, podcasts, video streams, whatever it might be.
Right.
I think some of the technology has evolved, that people have come up with new ways of doing that kind of ad hoc, you know, the corridor sessions and so forth.
Right.
But we've still got some thinking to do there. So watch this space.
Understood. All right. So let's switch over to Search Pilot, because we want to unpack what Search Pilot is actually all about. So give us a lowdown of this software and what it allows SEOs to do.
Yeah. So the fundamental thing we're trying to do is solve the biggest problems for the world's biggest websites. Mm-hmm. And through years of consulting, the two things that came up over and over and over again were the challenge of actually implementing the recommendations. So, you know, we, especially in the larger enterprise environments, we would say, you know, we would see that everybody knows, the team knows, our team knows, the client team knows, the bosses know that certain changes would bring results,
right?
But they still couldn't get it done for whatever reason, the technical blockers and the like. And so that's one part of it. And then the other part is making SEO provable, testable, and be able to generate the kind of reports that you see on the PPC side all the time, which is, you know, we spent this much money, but look, we made this much money.
There you go.
And you know, we really want to be able to do that for SEO. And so we built this platform, which is it deploys a little bit like a CDN, typically inside the CDN layer. Mm-hmm. So it sits there as a layer in the web stack, and it can make changes to anything about the HTML or HTTP response of any page on the website. And so for our large enterprise clients, that basically means that we can modify pages they were never able to modify in their CMS. And mm-hmm. one of our biggest customers had their store locator pages on a different server, different setup, and were just not able to make certain kinds of changes. And so we were able to not only help them update that with new store opening hours and the like, but also add richer information. So add some schema, add local data, add all kinds of other stuff, mm-hmm. and drive increased footfall. They measured that with increased footfall in the stores through greater search visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. And then the other part of it is that we knew that many of the kind of agile, large tech websites, so we'd seen it from people like Pinterest and Etsy, but we know Amazon and TripAdvisor and people like that were SEO testing. Doing SEO A/B testing, so you know, controlled scientific experiments to tell whether a particular change is going to be good from an SEO perspective or not. And our platform enables that. So we can get a little bit deeper into the technical details, but there's fundamental reasons why that's different to CRO testing, for example. So you can't do it with the same kind of platform that you might do your CRO testing on. And it has some differences in implementation and some differences in measurement. And our platform enables that. So we're doing that for some of the biggest websites in the world. And it's super exciting to get some of those results through. And so the final piece of that puzzle then was to add what we call full funnel testing, which is the ability to test SEO and CRO at once.
Which has really never been done before with a platform such as yours.
No, absolutely. So not as far as I know. So the idea of this is, well, actually, there's a couple of benefits. One of the benefits actually is that it enables a consistent user experience across the entire site. So pure SEO A-B testing has some pages as version A and some pages as version B.
Right.
And so as a user, if you navigate around, potentially you might see different experiences in different on different pages. Whereas with full funnel testing, one of the things that happens is you get a cookie set, and so you continue to get the same consistent user experience site-wide, regardless of whether you landed on version A or version B.
Right.
But the real business benefit is being able to say, this change has this much of an SEO impact, this much of a CRO impact, and therefore this much net impact. And we've seen all of the combinations. We've seen good for users, bad for search engines, vice versa, as well as obviously aligned results. And that just leads to really interesting decisions from there, where you can you can roll things out or not depending on their net result, but you can also learn from the thing that was negatively. So supposing you had a net positive result, but that was negative for one or other of those variables, you can roll it out to get the net uplift, but you can also look to fix the problems. Supposing it was massively positive for traffic but bad for CRO, you could roll it out to get that extra traffic and then look to solve the CRO problems in a way that didn't impact the SEO side of things.
Understood. So part of what you're attempting to broach here is how SEOs and sales can actually coexist, because they have been at not only arm's reach, but also quite challenging to be able to have them both in the same room and be able to work together, because aesthetically, CROs, or I should say maybe the UX side of sales, is directly challenging any type of content, increased content on a page that an SEO would want to see, and that's not only content but structure on the page due to the user flow and not hiding the cheese nearly as much from a lead flow standpoint. So there's been this constant friction between both camps, and what you're doing here is setting the platform in place where they can both be complementary to a solution, and you can even find unknown scenarios of CRO optimization while you're testing both testing the experience utilizing this A-B testing model. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And we think it kind of tries to bring those people back on the same page, because we have to remember the ultimate goal was always aligned. We were always trying to drive more business. And so this is a way of reminding people of that and getting them aligned around the same objectives, and then measuring them and holding them accountable to those same objectives. And like you say, ultimately learning what's going to work in both cases. And we've been talking about some of the changes Google has been making around the evolution of their algorithm and their focus on trying to more closely replicate with machine learning what users really want. And so that's kind of zooming out. That's kind of the big strategic reason why we think this is part of the future, is that the Google algorithm is going to be increasingly black box. So we have to test to find out what works and what doesn't. But also on the full funnel side, these things should become more and more aligned, because Google's goal is the websites that users like. And so if we can just help kind of go on that journey and say, here is a website that both users and Google like, we can help accelerate that kind of, I guess, improvement of the web.
Understood. So what you're doing is really trying to give a leg up, because that's exactly what Google's actually analyzing and building its model towards. And we're still in our infancy of testing the search value plus CO, conversion value together. So
it's super early days for this, but it's aligned, and that's why we're excited. We're trying to get to the same place that basically Google is.
Very good. Very good. Very well. Hopefully, you're not going to turn into an entire search ad platform. I mean,
no. Well, but we're pushing in the same direction. That's cool.
Absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. So, with that, this kind of ties into the second topic that I wanted to cover with you, because Google is actually looking for the best resource for its users. And the users change topically, and the users are looking for different things, obviously. But it's learning, and it's learning more and more in this black box that we're talking about here. It's certainly not going to be shared with us, but we will be suffering or benefiting by how we adjust our content, how we adjust the user flow, the UX experience. All that's a accumulation of a lot of different changes over the years. This is where we are right now. So I wanted to capitalize on this moment and talk about a blog post that you sent out. You posted on Moz August of 2017, which literally you walked through the last 15 years, so to speak, of search evolution, not just SEO, but it's the relationship between the search platforms and the SEOs, right? Because it really has been this
the ecosystem itself.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you've seen an entire growth in this industry. It's like watching an infant grow into a teenager, so to speak. The infant side of things is very reactionary. It's if you touch it, it's hot. Okay, ouch. Okay, let's try something else. So you started to kind of lay out a timeline here, and going back, I mean, just some of the references that you had as links as a ranking signal, right? One of the key things that Google was looking for back in 2003, 2004, and all of a sudden, all the webmasters and SEOs started to exploit that entire thing. So that, I mean, that's the beginning of this discussion. And you see this you call it the oscillation back and forth of platforms adjusting to their human counterparts, so to speak. So,
yeah.
So walk us through these steps in our journey, if you could. And that's a tough task to ask from a summation standpoint, but this evolution that we're experiencing, take us back a little ways and share with us how we started off searching.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go back to those early days of particularly of Google, and I mean, all the way back to the academic papers, right? You know, the anatomy of large scale hypertext, whatever it was. And look at the examples in there. So links were a practically perfect quality metric when nobody was using them as a quality metric, right? Like before we all knew that that was how Google was going to operate, it was amazing. And it was such a step forward from what had come before. And you look back at some of the examples, and they have examples like there was a robots.txt blocked page that was on whitehouse.gov that Google returned as the number one result, and it was the best result. Google hadn't even crawled it. And this was in, you know, 98 or maybe even earlier.
Right.
And so, firstly, I think, you know, links were a phenomenal metric until we came along. And so... That was what I was getting at, is that, you know, there's this oscillation from they discover a thing, they tell everybody this is how it works, it gets kind of used, abused, overused, and there's a kind of correction. Mm-hmm. And then you get that kind of the next thing. So I think, you know, links is a classic one, and I think we're still on that oscillation, frankly. You know, you can see it from, the early academic stuff in 98 through the early link penalties to... things like Penguin in the early teens, and still today with the machine learning kind of stuff that's going on. The other ones I highlighted, one was, I mean, it's just showing my age of how long I've been around the industry, but those kind of mid-2000s where Google, I don't think we realized at the time how fast Google's ability was growing to rank and index content at immense scale compared to everything we'd been used to up to that point. It was growing so fast, and it was only really with hindsight that we can see how good they got, how quickly, you know, that step change. And that was kind of an era where they were incentivizing the content, the production of long tail content. So particularly through AdSense, which is one of the most underrated Google acquisitions, I think, of all time. And
that was Applied Semantics, right, in 2003.
Yeah, and what I think wasn't real, well, few people realized at the time, was quite how symbiotic that was with Google's kind of core business, because AdSense essentially funded, Google was funneling some percentage of their money back into funding the creation of long-tail content, which they were best at indexing. And so suddenly there were answers there were web pages about all of these long-tail queries that people were starting to search for, increasingly searching for, that you know, only existed because they've been funded by that ecosystem.
You called it democratizing the monetization of content on the web. Everybody's getting paid there. And what, mm-hmm.
You could just sign up.
Absolutely.
Right? You didn't need to have an ad sales team. You could start your own little, you know, AdSense blog or whatever it might be. And so then that got industrialized and you got the content farms and you got the demand medias of the world. And they started realizing, I think there was this obviously some societally useful stuff going on here. Mm-hmm. So there was the production or the publishing on the web of databases that had never been exposed before. And you get out of that, you get the growth of some amazing businesses. So businesses like Zoopla in the UK, which is kind of the UK's Zillow, I guess, those kind of equivalents in the States, mm-hmm. where you've got databases of real estate listings that had never been exposed to the web before. And by just essentially a step one, dump the database on the internet. And then Google was like, yep, I'll have some of that. slurps it up and slurps are funny. That was the Yahoo bot, wasn't it? Starts ranking it for all these long tail queries, because if you're searching for specific long tail real estate query in neighborhood in mm-hmm. wherever, there hadn't been content for that, and now there was, and that drove immense returns in traffic and business for those early movers. So you see it in all those industries, in real estate, in travel, in jobs, in e-commerce, any kind of long tail business. But you also saw it in those kind of content farms. And so that was when the era of eHow and articles written by somebody where English wasn't their first language, they'd been paid
right.
not even a Western minimum wage to produce a content like how to tell if someone's having a heart attack. And then
spinning it 25 different ways to be able to create.
And that. If you're doing that search, maybe it's better that you find that piece of content than not. But there's definitely times when that's not helpful,
right.
And it leads to all of the EAT and your money or your life and all of those kinds of iterations. But also things like there was just some stuff that was just low value and just not high quality content at all, but was ranking because nobody else was on that. Nobody else had written that specific piece of content. Anyway, and so you get Google then pulling back with the Panda update to say, whoa, okay, just because you technically put a page on the internet about that thing doesn't necessarily mean that we should be ranking you. And that oscillation, I think, has just kind of continued. And
so push pause there for a second, because what you're saying here is really is that in a perfect world, right, in a purist world, that links would have been fantastic. But as soon as we abused them, we kind of prompted the entire evolution of, okay, well, if you're doing that, young lad, then I'll measure this over here. And ultimately with these web farms, we just kind of oozed into all of the different recesses. So the worst part of the human content nature just tried to find every possible penny that it could by these mm-hmm. web farms and throwing AdSense on 2,000, 3,000 pages. And that's where the web scraping really came into play there as well. It's not just spin content, but it's also scraping content of other sites to be able to bolster whatever hodgepodge Frankenstein page they were hoping to get ranking, at least for one or two long tail phrases, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know. That was, for me, one of the early controversies that I think broke out of the search space and the SEO industry,
right,
into a bit of a broader consciousness, was some of those quality challenges that Google was having in the late 2000s, kind of 2010 mm-hmm. pre-Panda era, where people were doing queries where they were expecting to get a specific website and they weren't. They were getting a knockoff, or they were getting an exact copy, or they were getting the content scraped and repurposed and spun. Mm-hmm. And if anybody was on Hacker News in that era, that was when Matt Cutts himself was regularly showing up and talking to the community about because Stack Overflow was one of the big sites that was getting hit. Many scrapers of Stack Overflow were outranking the original,
right,
for long tail programming related queries, which of course meant that the early adopters, those folk who told their parents, told their friends, told their colleagues to use Google because they were the techies who understood that it was better, they were now starting to say, well, actually, this isn't better anymore. This is not working for me. I'm not finding the sites that I'm expecting. And so, I think I called it out in the post that there were a couple of updates specifically announced to the Hacker News community first, because they'd been talking about it so much. And you know, basically saying, hey, can you report any examples you are continuing to see? Because we think we've solved this problem. Mm-hmm. You know, Google saying, hey, are you still spotting these? And I remember that, you know, individual Googlers would show up in those comment threads and leave their email addresses and say, you know, send me a query if you see a weird one.
So they're actually crowdsourcing their own, building their algorithm by crowdsourcing the believers that we can't have a pure search and some of the earliest SEOs. So that was kind of a linkage to the disavow model still that we were able to actually incorporate. And again, it's Google learning, and why not actually ask its users to be able to let them know,
to do the work,
do the work for them, right? What better way? Yeah. So again, it's this ecosystem right now, instead of a space where we've got content subsidized to be able to build a richer model, we are now also getting feedback from users of web spam and basically, you know, non-paid hall monitors out there trying to purge the system of all this flotsam that's out there. I don't know how many euphemisms I can throw into one sentence, but there you go.
I mean, I think a lot of this stuff is just fodder for their machine learning models.
Absolutely. So, all right. So take us to the next step here is that we started to clean up our own act, right, so to speak. And Google also was penalizing. And what, April 24th, 2012, I believe was Penguin, if I'm not mistaken. And there was a heck of a lot of slaps. Not only slaps on the hand, but completely demonetized and devalued sites. There was a huge drop in visibility of some of these web farms, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And with first Panda, the various iterations of Panda, then Penguin, and then those going continuous essentially sometime after that.
Yep.
And then I think, but of course, there were other things going on at the same time. So there was also the growth in mobile was going on through that era that I think, you know, Google and Facebook particularly spotted that in their internal metrics well before most people in our community were really banging the drum as hard as they should have been. I include myself in that. And we only really saw it with hindsight. We saw it in maybe 2014, 2015, was we saw how much they'd been doing in 2012 and 2013on those things. Hmm. So that overlapped with that. Then, of course, you got the different screen real estate. And so there, I think that's what leads to a lot of the kind of Google as publisher kind of things, you know, the one box, the answer box, the little rich search results with the things like flight, widgets in there. And so I think all of that then starts to change the relationship between publishers, that kind of implicit deal, I guess, between publishers and search engines. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think it's more than an implicit deal. I think it's quite explicit. There were various court cases in the early 2000s about whether Google was entitled to essentially violate copyright by crawling your website, taking a copy of it, and storing it on their servers.
Right.
And their defense was basically, this is in the public interest. It's in the public interest to create a search engine, and search engines need copies of the content to work. And they said, we offer an opt-out. You can choose not to be indexed. You can choose not to be crawled through combinations of robots.txt and robots exclusion protocols. And so, that normally isn't good enough in copyright law. You can't just say, if they told me not to, I wouldn't have. But in search, that was allowed. But the deal was that they were sending organic traffic. And so I think, the more they use that stuff and publish it in their own search results and give the answer and give the one box and give the lead people down that that path of having rich results,
right,
the more that deal is under tension. And I think that's going to be a big thing in the next 5 years, is the kind of antitrust kind of monopoly competition type stuff, right, versus that implicit explicit deal with publishers. And from our perspective, from my perspective, on the search pilot side, this is why we're all in on testing, because just to give one specific example, that when FAQ schema markup came out, there was a lot of speculation about whether that was net good or bad, basically, because obviously on the one hand, your website gets to take up a load more screen real estate in the search results with all the little drop downs and answers. On the other hand, people don't need to leave the search result to get those answers, right? They don't actually need to visit your website. And obviously, we've seen it vary depending on some details. But FAQ schema in the early days, at least, was one of the very few tests we've seen that was almost universally positive. Almost every time we added it, it was an uplift in traffic to the website. And so that was interesting, because until we ran that test, there was a load of arguing and speculation.
Well, there still is arguing. Yeah, so, and as they are, and as more and more feature snippets and rich results are actually bubbling to the surface, there are CTR tests that are happening all the time. There is a sans position zero mindset that if you actually get into that featured space, you're actually cutting your nose to spite your face from a transaction in a CRO.
Well, there's a bit of prisoner's dilemma going on here as well, I think, because to an extent, you can be better off if you do the work to get there. Mm-hmm. And yet, if somebody does the work to get there, everyone is worse off. So, it's not completely trivial to figure out what your approach should be. For me, it's been one of the more interesting areas of testing where we've been able to say it's not obvious from first principles whether this should be a good idea or not. So let's go get some data.
I think you and your organization's the best position to be able to give that type of analysis, that type of feedback. Otherwise, it's all anecdotal and a good deal more reactionary, because there is this counter Google real estate mindset that, hey, don't take our customers away from us. We actually want to control the experience. Yeah. And with Google actually rolling out these different widgets and applications, even to the degree of actual lead form and lead generation at the Google screen, that small business to large business can believe they're losing out on that transaction, right?
And they may be. And yes, it's certainly not. It's not simple.
No.
That's for sure.
So fast forward past Mobilegeddon, right? Because it was very UX experience, UX and user experience oriented. Now we're in another era. So we're in the machine learning era, the entity and entity relationship era of Google trying to learn more about content, ideas, concepts, as well as who's actually more of authority in that space. So I don't mean to speak for you. You tell us, where are we in this period of time?
Yeah, so I think the fundamental thing to kind of realize here is that we are, this is quite personality driven, I think, on the Google side. So, and you can look at that, the evolution from Larry to Sundar, a bunch of the changes Sundar has made, and the rising stars and the people who've been moved out of the organization, that a lot of those people who moved on were the ones who had kind of resisted, I think, machine learning in the organic search algorithm. Mm-hmm. And these days, I think they're all believers. I think they're all in on this. And so I still think we're in the early stages of it, but nonetheless, the impact has been immense. And I think you can see it in the specialized areas. You can see it in the improvements to translation, the improvements to image search or image classification and understanding.
Sure.
Speech to text recognition, all of those kinds of areas. And I think we're in the earliest days of truly understanding the web. But when you see what's going on in public data sets like GPT-3 and that side of things, the amount of effort that Google themselves are putting into those same areas, I think it's going to be a very interesting decade of seeing quite what computers are capable of, because the humans have done their part, right? We've written the web. Right. And we put essentially the sum total of human knowledge in a machine readable format, and let's see what happens next.
Now, it's a regular mantra on the show that we put everything in front of the machine, and then the machine turns into Skynet. Well, so I mean, there are trepidations of allowing the machine to learn and build its own model, build its own analysis and entity structure, and just understanding the relationships of content, because we're putting our best foot forward in content, but we still have a lot of garbage out there, and it could lead machine learning astray, right?
Right. So I think we need to separate. I would say there's three things, and I'm not really worried about the singularity right now. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's theoretically possible. And I know there are some people who kind of naysay it even at the theoretical level. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that something goes from being a text classifier to being a war robot, without some steps in between.
There's a few steps.
But,
so.
the, The two things that I think are societal level concerns right now. One is, if you learn from humans, you learn human biases. Mm-hmm. And you only have to look at some of the, I mean, again, translate is a classic example of this. If you translate gendered words, mm-hmm. they show up, or with, you know, you translate things about people's professions and they show up in other languages gendered, mm-hmm. for example. So the computer has got, it believes that certain roles can only be performed by certain people.
Right.
You look at some of the image classifying things that, you know, can recognize white people, but totally fail on other races. There's a lot of those kind of areas where I think there's danger,
right.
In kind of naively thinking that an algorithm is somehow unbiased. Mm-hmm. And these machine learning algorithms are 100% not unbiased. They contain all of the biases of their creators and their training set. So that's one side of it. Then I think the other side of it is the kind of unintended consequences. So a little bit like the some of the stuff that Google has done deliberately, where they've put widgets or answer boxes or snippets or, you know, whatever else it might be. Mm-hmm. And some of those have had very negative impact on individual businesses.
Oh yeah.
I think Google has always had impacts on businesses, but at least in theory, there was somebody, some human somewhere pulling the lever, and they could in theory unpull it if they saw negative impacts they didn't like.
Right.
I think the more that you're just kind of optimizing to a theoretical objective function, the more there's going to be collateral damage, and the more there's going to be small businesses that just wiped out because computer says that's not good.
So yeah, I could be able to unflick that switch because it's going to be cooked into the entire system, right?
Totally. And it's just better for some abstract definition of better, mm-hmm. across the entire set of search results. And there's no way to unpick it and kind of say, well, okay, it's better here, but let's not do it here.
Right.
And I suspect that will fall again unequally, right? So the impact, the human impacts of that are going to be probably increasing, increasingly damaging in inequality senses or in kind of equity and fairness.
Wow.
Concepts. That's the side of it that I think, I mean, I think they are thinking about it, but I don't know if anybody has the urgency it needs.
Well, I mean, we're certainly going to be guiding this machine learning, and certainly we're going to be able to feed the beast, so to speak, with better and better content. And we just had a news story about Google looking at the super authorities, these mm-hmm. type of entities that Google deems as factual based on behavior of not submitting non-factual data over a period of time. So you now have these models starting to be formed to obviously train the machine learning even more. With this entire new era of contextual and semantic understanding, right? Where does a startup company that's brand new into the industry, how do they start trying to make their way in this? Because this is no longer what 15 years ago was, spin out some good content or even structure a site that is logical, right? You need so many underpinnings of outside value that, I mean, in essence, it's the same as starting out a website with no links, but now you have to have citation flow. You have to have information that you are participating into the community to be able to bolster your own authority. Where do we start whenever you're having a new company jump into the mix?
I would start with the end in mind. So start with the end users and the goals. And this is not to oversimplify, like these are hard problems, but trying to find what's the thing that you're building that people need. What is the, if you make stuff that people want, I think is the famous Y Combinator phrase, and trying to find product market fit, essentially. These are super hard human problems. And ultimately, if you succeed at that, you know, your website will be successful. And so I think what I counsel startups I talk to is definitely to focus on the on that side of things, making sure that what you're doing is differentiated, interesting, stand out. And I personally really like the kind of marketing MVP side. Hmm. So engaging people with your tone of voice, your positioning, your insights, doing a lot of writing, written textual content is still huge. Mm-hmm. And again, we're living and breathing this on the Search Pilot side with our SEO testing case studies, for example. We've got data that we think is differentiated, interesting, and useful. Mm-hmm. So our job is to get it out there and get it in front of people. And in the early days, that might be a lot of legwork and a lot of getting it in front of individual people. But you know what? We're putting it on the website as well. So it gets indexed and it gets crawled and it gets it, eventually it gets to rank. And that's that kind of cycle and that evolution. Exactly. So yeah, at the startup end, start with the end in mind in that sense, like try and build something differentiated and useful that people want. I think on the kind of more established company end, that's where we come back to testing. That's where we kind of say, okay, you've got this, you've got some momentum. So now it's about steering and focusing and delivering the thing that that is exactly what your users and search engines.
So for the legacy business that has a lot of content, yeah, maybe they played the game.
And a lot of authority, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So jettison some of the content that's not useful for the user. And I guess that's the North Star in all cases, right? Make it useful for the user.
Ultimately.
And as simple as that sounds, boy, we have had a convoluted way to get to where we are. And
yeah, and we still do. It's still a hot task.
It really is. And search engines have been almost like a reflection upon ourselves of garbage content was giving garbage results after a while. And we're using it as a bit of a cleanup job to be able to improve our own resources for our own consumption. So search engines have a sociological component play as a particular component as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean they're embedded in our lives now, and so I don't think you can. I don't think you can really separate like modern information flow from what society at large thinks about all these topics. So yeah, they have a huge job, and hopefully they're taking it as seriously as they need to.
Well, for the most part, as we understand, the internet is really the best form of content as we understand it. Are just cat videos to begin with. So we might as well just get rid of everything else.
We can always go back to that.
We can always go back to cat videos. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And there's certainly a tome of information that you're a subject matter on. And we want to lift up you and make sure that our listeners always listen and follow you on social. But for if I could just ask you real quick, what bugs you about your industry right now?
People have a lot to say, I think, about the SEO industry and the ways it's changed and all kinds of other things. For me personally, I think the main things that bother me are just reflections of things in wider society, right? Like there's people who say things they shouldn't on social media, people who get upset about things people have said on social media. Like that happens in the industry and outside.
Sure.
I think the most specific thing that bothers me really is the way that some bits of things like research and data and new analysis can get treated by the industry and can get treated differently depending on who put it out there. I see colleagues get treated a different way to the way I get treated, for example. And I think that's detrimental to the industry as a whole. We ought to be thinking about the underlying ideas, but we also ought to be encouraging new research, new data, new science, new exploration, and not necessarily gatekeeping that with qualifications or, you know, is this person, you know, a trained statistician or whatever else? Like, let's build on the work.
Right.
And if we can find new ways of, if you can improve a piece of research or you can improve some data, then have at it. I think that's fantastic. You're building on each other's work. But let's also build people up and like not just knock them down at the first at their first attempt, because we're all beginners and we were all beginners, and in many ways I think we still are, because
the way things are moving, we're constant experimenters and we don't know, and we're all trying to find our way and hold up a bit more light for somebody else, right?
100%.
Yeah, I caught that. There was a bit of a chatter inside of SEO whenever there was a data analyst that jumped in there, or her husband was a data analyst, and it was just like, okay, you don't need to be vetted out to actually know what you're looking at and be able to know how to test something. But yeah, that was an interesting thing. Well, conversely, what does excite you about your industry right now?
I think it's the flip side of the same thing. I love the curiosity. I love the exploration and the discovery of new things. And I think actually kind of close to my kind of current experiences, I'm just loving the way that the technology has improved. So the difference between building a company in 2020 versus building a company in 2005 is is quite dramatic, and the kind of computing power that we have at our fingertips, the kind of tools and technology and APIs and data that would have cost, you know, six, if not seven figures to get access to in the early 2000s, now you can, you know, spin up for a few dollars a time at AWS or on Google Cloud Compute or wherever else. And yeah, so I'm just excited. That feels like it compounds. It feels like every time we discover new things, we can go faster and we can discover even more new things. So that's what I'm excited about.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, can you give us a final thought to our digital marketing audience and maybe aspiring SEOs that are just getting into the marketplace? Because you've seen a lot, I've seen a lot in over the years, but with fresh new SEO eyes, what would be your guiding thought?
I'm going to leave you with that curiosity thing. That's the guiding principle. That's served me well for 15 years in the industry. Just see something weird, just ask why. Just figure out what's going on. Dig a level deeper, talk about it, write about it. And what they say about science, it doesn't start with Eureka. It starts with, that's funny.
Very good. Very good. So is there something we can promote for you on Search Pilot or other today?
Yeah, I would. Well, I mean, if you want to chat to me about any of this geeky stuff, I'm just at Will Critchlow on Twitter. Search Pilot is at Search Pilot. And on the Search Pilot side in particular, we've got an email list that publishes these SEO A/B testing case studies with what we think are interesting, novel results. And we've got data that no one else has. So I think it's our pinned tweet, but it certainly should be pretty easy to find. So hit us up on Twitter, drop me a line if you want to chat about anything we talked about here today.
Absolutely, and we'll put that link in our show notes and reference it. It's marketing.searchpilot.com/SEO-AB testing-case-study-sign-up.
We can do better with that URL.
No worries.
Find it on Twitter.
Just go to Twitter and ask Will for that. We certainly appreciate that continued bit of information that you guys are doing over there. And kudos on the Search Pilot launching, especially during this period of time. But you are absolutely in the perfect spot to be able to give us feedback of what we're seeing inside of machine learning, but also how we can actually kind of marry CRO and SEO together so we can all play nice, right?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on the show today.
You're more than welcome. More than welcome. So be sure to check out all the trending news that we'll cover with Will Critchlow in the bonus news podcast episode and the bonus YouTube upload that we'll probably be out in a couple days here. If you want to follow Will, you can follow him on Twitter at Will Critchlow, as well as LinkedIn Will Critchlow. And you also want to follow along on the other Twitter brands of Search Pilot, Brain Labs, and Distilled. All fantastic entities, but what a great growth in Brain Labs. Fantastic organization, 300 deep. That's fantastic. All right, so don't forget to like and subscribe to Edge of the Web on YouTube. And if you're feeling up to it today, we always appreciate a iTunes review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you'd like to know more of. And they're still running a survey on the site. If you want to let us know how we can best serve you in content. And if you're interested in being on the show, let us know over at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. See all the must-see videos and all the audio and all the transcripts and much more over at edgeofthewebradio.com. Next show, we're going to be having Dixon Jones of Inlinks, I think, from all of us over at Edge of the Web. Do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.